Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of our weekly podcast, Flats and Shanks. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
All right, boy.
Double bubble this week.
I've got a sweat on.
We've put a video out on Sunday, which was a live podcast, which we did on Saturday morning with Joe Marler and Justin Marshall. But obviously, that didn't cover the games at the weekend. That was pre-game. So because this is how much we think of you guys, you listeners, you men and women, you boys and
children
out there, we love you. And it's, you know, you can love people that you never met.
Do you know what? You can love people too much.
Yeah.
Like me and Reg Regan.
Yes.
The reason I said I've got a sweat on is because we've just been laughing our pecs off at the best Reg Regan's greatest hits. Now, Reg Regan is Matthew Johns, the brother of Andrew Johns, rugby league, Australian rugby league legend. Reg Regan is the character that his brother Matthew Johns created for the TV, and it's just genius. If you don't know about it, go and watch it. I mean, I've just tweeted it, by the way, on my account. It's just genius.
Brilliant, and we'll tweet that on the Flats and Shanks account, yeah. Because for some reason there might be someone and some people that follow Flats and Shanks that don't follow us personally.
Which will there?
I don't get. But yeah, that Reg Regan video.
Oh man, how good is that?
I didn't like it.
Yes, you did.
I loved it.
There you go.
It's like a Simon Cowell answer for X Factor, isn't it?
Yeah, you're good. You're good at that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's so much fun. It's a bit like, for those of you that are old enough, remember, Dennis Pennis type of interview. Very stupid. He plays a character in it, and it's just, I had tears in my eyes.
I mean, you'd never seen it before, and the problem was,
My makeup's running.
I said, watch this, it's hilarious. And as soon as you do that, it's not funny anymore, but you still, even though I built it up like that, you still crying.
I still had tears ruining my makeup.
I'm just desperate to do one myself.
How have you been, buddy?
Hello, Bert. Yeah, not bad, Bert. Yeah, fine. Absolutely fine. Trucking around a bit. But most
time of year, though, isn't it?
Yeah, most importantly, I had an evening at home last evening, and I dropped the kids off in bed.
All right.
Did a poo in bed. Dropped the kids off in bed, and then I went downstairs, and over the course of a couple of hours, I applied almost an entire pot of boot cream from Herring Shoes to my brown leather boots that I have had for about 10 years and that I've neglected recently, and I brought them back to life. They are reinvigorated and I'm disproportionately excited to be wearing them today.
That's incredibly boring little story you've told there.
So mate. I showed you. I've been looking forward to having a night at home for 10 days because I haven't had one
to clean your boots.
Well, clean them obviously, but to bring them back up and reinvigorate that leather, because leather's just skin. You got to treat it right.
It's a terror story, mate. Bring us back up now with a good one. Come on.
And then this morning I saved a Labrador's life.
Brilliant. That's
in
better.
A swamp just outside Bradford and Avon.
Great.
Okay.
Have you seen on BBC, it's on iPlayer at the moment, it was a World War One documentary.
Funny you say that.
By Peter Jackson, who was the director of Lord of the Rings, a Kiwi himself. I've been around his house, actually, with Richard Hill.
Have you?
In the 05.
No, but I've been told to download it and watch it, because apparently it's incredible, and I watch it on the train today.
It's brilliant.
Is it?
Yes, because it starts off, and I'm not sure what format the cameras were recording back in like 1917, 16. But you know, it's quite fast, and it's not real time now, and it's black and white, obviously. But then there's a moment, probably about 15 to 20 minutes into the film, where it just switches to colour. You hear the voices. It's all slowed down. It's like a movie. You know, it's like actors in it. You know, it's incredible. It's so good. It's a must watch. It's about an hour and a half long.
And that's on iPlayer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on iPlayer at the moment.
Okay, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to blooming well watch it. I've started watching the second series of Sinner.
Okay.
Did you watch the first series?
Yes, I did.
Really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it.
Uber dark. I think this one might be dark also. Only two episodes in, but it's full on dark chocolate, boy. I like it, though. And Michelle said we got to watch a film called Truth on Netflix, so I've downloaded that in case. My train journey's an hour and a half long, but I've downloaded 39 films and 90 episodes of things
really?
To watch.
Dynasty I watched as well.
Oh, how good.
Yeah, but it was the BBC documentary on World War One is called They Shall Not Grow Old.
That's right. My sister sent me a WhatsApp and said, you've got to watch this, homeboy. That's what she said.
Yeah, but Dynasties is really good. There's a chimpanzee called Dave. Alpha male.
No, I saw some of it the other night.
Yeah.
David.
All the young ones try and...
What was that tosser called that tried to overturn him? What was his name?
You can't... It was Luther.
Ooh, didn't like that geezer.
But they try to, but...
Thing is, boy...
Can't keep a good man down for long, can you?
Can't keep a good Dave down for long, can you? Look at Cameron, he's on his way back.
But he gets back and he retakes leadership of...
That wound on his leg, holy moly. Tough old boy, mate.
But then I read in the Daily Mail, so it's got to be true, that Dave is now dead.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why reading the Daily Mail?
Sometimes it comes up on my Twitter feed or social media feed.
Yeah, don't do that.
Facebook, I think.
You don't need to do that. Mm. I do, actually, having said that, I'm a complete hypocrite because I read their sport. I really like their sport. It's like a lot of these papers, you can get political about which paper you read and don't read. Actually, our job is to read the sports sections, and I read all of them. I do read some other papers, some other stuff sometimes, but I read the sports page. I don't really care what paper the...
Do you read the Sunday Sport?
Tommy, who's your... Have you got a...
David Flatman.
Somebody asked who my favourite rugby writer was.
David Flatman.
Tommy, what you like?
Yeah.
Have you got someone who you think...
Evening Standard.
Yeah. Have you got someone you would... Because people often say, I never miss his column. I always read his column or her column. I don't have that, but I...
No, not at all.
I do have writers whose columns I enjoy the most.
I'll be honest with you. I don't read papers. I read them online. I don't buy them. So it's sometimes quite difficult. I'll often...
I subscribe to a couple of papers, though.
Yeah.
So I can read it on my phone, but it's like buying a paper.
I like the Times. I like the Telegraph. I should.
If I... I'm getting... Round
that you're top two.
Yeah, fine.
You're getting around to what? But I also obviously read the Wales online as well.
Yeah.
And Wales Rugby online, because I've got to keep up to date with a lot of rugby as well.
Yeah.
In Wales and the Pro 14, as well as keeping up to date with the Gallagher Premiership and internationals.
Yeah, okay. This is all good stuff. Do you want my top three sports writers?
Yep. Hit me.
In no particular order, Jonathan Liu. Paul Hayward, Stuart Barnes.
Are you after some more work?
No.
As a journalist? No? Okay,
no.
Just checking.
I'm not a journalist.
Yet. You sort of are, mate.
Not really. I love Stuart Barnes' column. Always do. Always love Jonathan Liu's. And always love Paul Hayward's. That's why I picked those three. Clearly, that's why I picked them. All right.
How have you been, anyway?
I'm fine. It's you I'm worried about.
How was... your Saturday after the live podcast in the Bear Pub in Twickenham, which, I mean, it's quite difficult sometimes for you listeners to, I suppose, properly enjoy it, because it's better if you come. It's hard to recreate.
Yeah, but I was at
the atmosphere, listening to it with earphones on the tube.
Yeah, but Monday night in City, I was hosting this eSports Awards. It's a massive thing, so it's gamers, basically. But you think... sports big, like football, and football's huge, but things like rugby, cricket, gaming is as big, if not bigger, than our sport and cricket put together. I mean, it's just huge, a whole other world. Anyway, I was hosting this awards, and they sort of broadcast it globally and all that sort of stuff. So it was really nice. But I was at this Gamers Award, didn't know anyone in the room except the event organisers. And there were, I guess, 600 people in the room, something like that. And I had five people tap me on the shoulder and say, listen to your pod, Marla was awesome. Justin Marshall was awesome. Really liked it. So I think people do listen to it, yeah.
But we had to cut a lot of it out because, I mean, we want you to come to...
Oh, did you cut some out, did you?
Yeah, we cut a little bit out. You know, we don't want to stitch the boys up. I was actually on the plane yesterday. I flew to Marseille yesterday. We did a quick video with Brian Habana for the BBC, and that should be released later on this week. But a guy sat next to me on a plane who was in commercial property. He was going out to Nice, I think.
I wish I was in commercial property.
And he was listening to the podcast.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And it's you know, it's nice that. And I haven't listened to it yet, because, I mean, I was there, so I know what you said. But you cutting bits out, it's an interesting one. I remember doing...
I mean, because a lot of it is, we're there with a live audience, we're there to make them laugh. Not all of it is appropriate for iTunes and podcasts, so that's why.
Yeah, and we're not doing that. I remember doing these supporters Q&As when I was working at Bath after I stopped playing, and Gary Gold was our DOR, and he would always get 150 supporters in the room, and he'd say things. First of all, he'd say, right, I'm going to tell you something which is confidential, okay? This confidential doesn't leave this room, and you know it's going to leave the room because there are people live tweeting it.
Yeah.
But he's doing it to try and make everyone feel like they're special, which is a nice idea, but actually... it just really pisses off everyone who's not there, because it's like, well, we couldn't come because we've got jobs and whatever, and there are no tickets left. So what we're not doing here, listeners, is saying, well, if you'd come, you'd have heard it all. We want these guests to come. We are not about creating headlines, and you know, do what you like in this game, but we are not about... So Joe Marler said, didn't say anything controversial, but he said some things during our pod, and so did Marshy, so did Shanks, and so did I, during our live pods. Is a bit different when you're live. That if it came out, nobody would really care what Shanks and I said. But Marshy and Joe, people might care, and you can make a headline out of it, and they won't come back.
A lot of it's tongue-in-cheek anyway.
Yeah, and of course it's tongue-in-cheek, and they won't come back. So it's actually, we want to protect them, and we want them, you know, so we're not cutting out all the juicy bits, but there are certain things that, do you know what, if it said something seriously controversial, we might save him. But otherwise, if he's telling a joke and someone's going to take it out of context, from a live show, we will bin that, because... we won't broadcast that. Well, Shanks does all the work. I don't. But you know, this is not about saying we know something you don't know, dear listener. It's actually like, try and come to the events, because then you'll get everything. Then
I didn't realise how much I go after everything I say.
I don't think you do
on the podcast, but
yeah, but because you listen to yourself, you're hypercritical of yourself. No one else has noticed.
Oh yeah, massively. I was yesterday. This video popping out to Toulon just for the day. Sounds really glam, doesn't it? But
it's not. It's knackering.
Got up at 4:15.
Yeah.
Got on a plane out from Heathrow.
Yeah.
Drove from Marseille to Toulon. Stade Mayol. Mayol. It's built on a car park and shopping centre.
Yeah.
Never knew that. I'd never been before. Met Brian Habana there. And unfortunately, you couldn't come.
Habsy B.
Because of work commitments. So I took Steve Spears with me. He's an actor, Big Al from Stella. He's been in Extras, Cemetery Junction, which is a film with Ricky Gervais. He plays a policeman in there. It's an incredibly funny film.
Tucker's recently, his own show,
yeah, which has been commissioned for a series. That was a pilot episode.
Yep.
BBC have now commissioned it, so massive news for him.
He is one of the funniest men I've ever met in my whole life.
Oh, he was hilarious.
He is hilarious. He's got funny bones.
He had three poos in three different countries yesterday.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's his diet, that
is. A record.
Yeah, well done.
No, actually, if you can beat that record, we want to know about it. Tweet us.
He's a very, very funny man. And I was gutted to miss that, but I...
England, Wales and France, just by the...
Oh, there you go. But I pulled out because I basically had to do a thing with... Not had to do, I mean, I kind of had to do it, but I did a Channel 5 advert yesterday.
Yeah, you contracted basically Channel 5.
Down at Quinn's, and we had Rob Shaw and Marla and all that sort of stuff. And it was great, but I was sorry to miss that. I saw Brian at Twickenham on Saturday, and he said, I'll see you next week. I said, no, you won't, Chief. I'm out.
I didn't tell him.
No, I think it was my job, I was meant to tell him, and I forgot, because you know how I forget stuff.
He was wearing a lovely white Adidas polo shirt,
Riggsy,
skinny black jeans, and he'd not trained, he said, in 6 months.
Riggsy.
unbelievable.
Yeah, but did you see him when he was playing? Like Shank sent me a video
yesterday. Yeah, God, yeah. It's a smasher, mate.
Yeah, he smashed, take his head off. Shank sent me a video yesterday of Habsy B just in unreal nick. And he does look in unreal nick. But I remember doing a thing with him with Land Rover and getting changed. It's not often, because you're around blokes with good nick all the time. And then by the time you're 40, it's gone. But while you're playing, everyone's in pretty good nick. And he took his top off. And he was absolutely huge, like his chest and back and arms. I was like, oh my God, how does he move that so quick? He was enormous, like his muscles.
Every muscle is like superimposed. It's like it's been injected with silicone, just to...
Like an avatar.
Beef it up a bit more.
Are you saying Brian Habana's on steroids?
No.
I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you just said he's a cheat and he's a match fixer and he's on steroids.
Out today as well is a little video I did with WIU with Lee Halfpenny.
That is so class.
So his name is Stephen Pound in this. Lee Halfpenny. It's actually Stephen Lee Halfpenny. So you can see the take on the name.
Don't tell him what it is, though. Don't tell who it is. Just tell him to watch it.
Watch it online. It's really good. It's probably the best I've ever seen Lee Halfpenny. You know, he's normally quite a quiet guy, but he just comes out of his shell because I won't give away too much, but he's in character.
I'm going to retweet it, basically.
It's really good. I mean, it's not spoiling it, because you see it at the start straight away. He's in makeup, and they're turning Lee into a really old man who gives a tour of the stadium, and people don't know that it's him.
I'm telling him now.
Yeah, well, you see it straight away on the video, but you've got to watch it. It's really good. It's really clever, and he comes across brilliantly.
I having met Lee Halfpenny a few times... I would not have put more than a quid on him being able to act and be funny. I thought he's quite a chill, very quiet, focused guy. Lovely, lovely, warm bloke to be around, but not the sort of guy that comes alive in front of a camera, I always thought. And it's not that he comes alive, he underacts perfectly. Mate, he was brilliant, man.
Brilliant. He couldn't have asked for a better player and a better delivery in everything he said. So that was a bit fun. That's just been released now. We'll tweet about that. And here we are on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, watching Red Reagan, absolutely wetting ourselves, laughing at Big Reg.
How was your weekend, apart from the rugby? Did you go down to... Did you go into the Premier... Not this Premiership, it's the...
Prem Cup. Premiership Rugby Cup. Yeah, I did, boy. We had a very early start on Saturday, didn't we, with a live pod. Then it was the All Blacks game, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then I went out to dinner with Matt Powell, who you know, and Cy Williams, who you know. No one else knows at home, but Matt Powell, ex-Worcester Warriors, and some clients of theirs in Richmond. Stayed at the Bingham Hotel, which is very nice.
Is it?
Yeah, nice. And then I was the next morning up to Coventry, boy. Up to Coventry to the Rico for the Wasp game, for the Premiership Rugby Cup, and then back down to London for Monday to host the eSports thing. So
busy couple of days.
And yesterday was being Tuesday, being a Channel 5 advert with Mark, with the Quinns guys. And then here we are today. And as soon as we finish this pod, I'm back to London again.
Strike while the iron is lukewarm. That's a saying, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm doing a pub quiz tonight.
What, you're hosting one?
Hosting a pub quiz for Quilter.
You'll do anything, you will.
No, definitely. They're a partner of ours, but yeah, they're doing a press event. And actually, do you know what it is? It's a load of press that we all know. Loads of rugby writers are coming, and it's going to be a pub quiz, nice dinner, and a few pints in a pub in London, and we call it work. So very, very lucky, really.
Yeah, don't tell your missus that.
I know, it's work though.
After the live pod, I went up to on Saturday morning. I went up to Gaucho in Farringdon.
Oh yeah,
Peter Scrivener was hosting sort of the rugby there. So
you went into the city to watch the game.
Yeah. So
a nice one,
Gaucho. Sell a package for people to come and watch the rugby in their restaurant in Farringdon. Scrivs, legend, he was hosting it. Really funny, really good. And did a Q&A with myself and Will Green pre-game, half-time, and end of the game.
Oh, Will Green. No one like him. Wasp tight head prop, THP, crouch, set, bind, 2, 3, 4. Crouch, touch, pause, engage.
He listens to the pod, mate. He's really complimentary. And he's
you know Green and I are great mates, don't
you? Yeah, he's given up alcohol.
What?
Yeah, for I think 3 years, he said now. And I'd like to think that if I gave up alcohol, I would be in better shape than he was.
He used to run. Just he used joking. To run all the time. He's a shuffler, though. He's a scuttler.
Willie Green.
He's a scuttler, green. Yeah, yeah. He's a hell of a boy for lots of
great
reasons.
He was on great form.
Yeah, he and I do. We have debriefs every couple of months. We have a debrief and we go for breakfast somewhere nice and just debrief, talk it out and review a couple of games and crack on.
Do you know what really made me laugh was Scriv's got a load of the customers to write in questions. So a couple of people were written down a bit of paper, some questions to ask about the game. And he goes, I've got one here from Victoria. There's quite a good looking girl with her family sat in a little booth. And she went, she was like, oh no, I haven't asked one. He goes, Victoria there has got a question here. Who is the longest in the shower? It just properly tickled me.
Too easy.
And she got all embarrassed. And but it was good. And then I actually stayed on.
And it's Nnamdi Azikiwe anyway.
I stayed on and watched the Wales game after. A lot of people left, but there's probably about 10, 12 of us stayed and watched the Wales-Australia game. So a lovely Saturday for me.
Lovely Saturday.
And I got to train home.
Do you know, after the All Blacks game, I was with HSBC, which is Anthony Watson, Nick Evans.
I thought you were going to tell us which is a bank.
No, it's a really good fun. And you do a debrief after the game. And pretty much everything Nick Evans said would happen because he knows his onions. So then I quickly got down to the Royal Oak pub in Twickenham where a mate of mine, Johnny Ellis, has hospitality on match days.
Yeah.
And some of my buddies were in there and went in and caught most of the Wales-Australia game. And I thought I'd be a bit rugbyed out. But I was honestly, and I can say this to you honestly, boy, I was pumped to frig. With Wales winning that game. We didn't have the sound on. It was just silent TV with some music going. Pint of Guinness standing in front of it. And I was properly pumped to see them win that. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Bigger, hard as nails. Really composed. Alan Wynn.
Can you just stop?
A rugby god.
I mean, we're going into the rugby in a bit, mate. You're just jumping.
All right, I'm just saying I loved it. I'm just saying I loved it. That's all. All right?
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sports ad free. That's Amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, we've had a break. Can we talk about rugby now?
Shall we start off with England, New Zealand, my boy?
Yeah. Pre-match, Nick Evans said, it's raining, that will benefit England. I said, why? And he said, because the All Blacks are not a huge rugby team. And he's right, they're not huge in terms of size.
Okay.
And, you know,
so they're a pretty big team.
They're a big team, but they're not, they're not physically...
Okay.
Hugely dominant. They're not. It's not like playing against the French in the wet, where they could pick a load of 140 kilo jobs. So that will help. Also, it can disrupt the line out. How ironic! They disrupted England's line out, but the rain can play havoc with a line out. So New Zealand rely heavily on the line out. A clean possession they get from there, and also means the back three just won't have as much purchase. You know, and they're so dangerous, actually. And he was right, really levelled it up. England started absolutely brilliantly. First kickoff, Retallick drops it. World's best player, just my opinion. World's best player drops the ball from the first kickoff.
Thought England Ty Quirlon was. Change your tune now, are you?
No, I think Tyke Furlong's brilliant. I mean,
you were just last week and the week before saying he should be in nomination for IIB Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's had a great year.
Who is it then? Him or?
He's had a great year.
Who is it, him or?
Well, there are lots of players who are in the running. I think in terms of all round, in terms of what they deliver in their key skills plus extra, I think Brody Retallick on his day is the best player in the world.
Okay, lad.
He hasn't necessarily had as stunning a year as Tadhg Byrne, but he's been doing it for years,
yep.
And he's still doing it. So England started brilliantly, really, really precise, really good handling in the wet. Lovely vision from Ben Youngs. That ball over the top to Ashton, that is how you counteract an aggressive up and in defence. Beautiful, catch him out, over the top, really, really nicely played by Youngs and finished. He was super quick at the breakdown, mega quick getting that ball away, a bit like Gregan used to be, a bit like Aaron Smith is now. Super sharp. And the star performance of the day by a mile was Sam Underhill. And I've been saying for a while, lad, because people have called him mechanical, all he does is tackle. I watched him play for Ospreys quite a lot, and I used to see him carrying and carrying really well. And, all right, he doesn't carry perhaps as freely and as athletically as Tipperick in the open spaces, but I think he carries really well. Plays a couple of games for England and just is a hit man, and everyone says he doesn't carry, but he carries, and he carried really well. I thought he was absolutely superb.
He's not sort of 6'4" and 17.5 stone, is he? So you're never gonna have a big carry like that, but he's really powerful, and you don't have to be like a big bloke to carry really, really hard. I always remember, you know, like someone like Josh Lucy, right? I probably had a stone or half a stone on him, but he could carry just as hard. He was unbelievably hard to stop and tackle because he'd run his weight. He was incredibly powerful. And I mean, Underhill's, I look at him and the way he plays, I find it very similar to Warburton.
Mm.
You know, he's very good in the breakdown. He's very good on his feet. He's a good carrier. Probably doesn't have those subtle skills that sometimes you associate with a seven, but for what you want from him, in
he's
the
an
game,
ox.
He is unbelievable.
Doesn't seem to get tired.
He was nearly front of that kick chase line every single time, leading it.
Don't get tired.
Wants to make tackles. My only issue is with him, if you're an England supporter or a rugby supporter, really. Or a basketball, he gets injured a lot, and it's whether or not he can string a full season together without breaking down.
Yeah, I think anyone who's writing off the Curry brothers at seven because they've seen Underhill play brilliantly, I think given if you're picking a first team tomorrow, Underhill's in it, but recent history says there's every chance he might get a knock leading into that World Cup, and hopefully we're wrong and he's there. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But he's got great technique, but he tackles horizontally, and that seems to, you know, knock him out every now and again, or hurt him every now and again.
Every hit, he wants to make an aggressive hit.
But geez, he hits hard, boy.
I know.
So hard. He's so aggressive.
His neck. But even the try that was disallowed, which we'll get to in a bit, you know, that's instinctive play.
That's serious talent, that.
Yeah, to be able to turn Beauden Barrett inside out, which he does.
Barrett can defend too.
Yeah, no, of course he can. He plays 15 a lot as well. Yeah. So that's a 15 tackle you have to make there.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether Beauden Barrett expected Underhill to sort of cut inside and thinking, right, you know, with all due respect, you know, he's not a back, so is he going to have the nous to cut back inside, then go back on the outside? But
amazing.
What not to do is turn your shoulders like that, so you get a blind spot. Always got to keep an eye on him. And
do you know who else would have finished that against the odds? Gethin Jenkins would have finished that. He'd have scored that as well.
Yeah.
Just in terms of stats. By the way, quickly, you were talking about super strong guys, Josh Lucy, Underhill, whatever, Warburton. The strongest bloke, pound for pound, I remember tackling in a game. I played against him a couple of times. You'll have played against him quite a few times, which is why I'm going to ask you. Because if you're tackling someone like Stephen Ferris or the late Jonah or one of those guys or Issa Tola Marker, like, you expect them to be freakily strong, and they are. But Percy Montgomery, I tackled him a few times and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, no, I've only played against him a handful of times. I can't remember him being incredibly...
Me neither, I thought he was weak.
I remember Richard Hill saying that as well. That,
oh, did he?
Yeah, he was really hard to tackle. But like someone like Jamie Noone was really tough to tackle. Just solid.
remember playing against Danny Hipkiss before he came to Bath, and when he got half a yard, he was so strong and low to the ground in such a strong fend, he was a nightmare.
Yeah, right. But anyway, go back to the game.
Okay.
New Zealand, 63% possession.
Mm.
You know, they were territory, they had 63% as well. Mm. All the stats favour New Zealand, make more line breaks. It's not to say England couldn't have won the game. They probably should have won the game, because South Africa, when they beat them in a rugby championship, I think they had 30% possession territory. So, but, you know, yeah, you've got to play well to beat the All Blacks. Mm. That's a given. You know, you have to play out of your skins, really, to beat the All Blacks. You're not going to beat them by playing 70 to 80% of your game. And you look at, you know, the last time England scored a point was around just under the 30-minute mark in the game. To go 50 minutes without scoring a point against the world's best team that have been for 60, 70 years consistently is a big ask. And unfortunately, England didn't do that. Damian McKenzie came into the game more in that second half as well. I think the first half, the kick chase was brilliant. I thought Ben Young's box kicks, Owen Farrell's kicks were just absolutely spot on. I mean, that was a big difference for me in the first half, was every single box kick that England put up, they weren't trying to play at all. They were just playing territorial rugby, low-risk rugby, but every single kick that Ben Youngs put up was bang on the button. It either allowed wingers to jump in the air and tap the ball back, or it allowed Underhill just to hit man and ball, and they did that. And, you know, you thought after 20 minutes, you thought, this is it.
Yeah.
England are going to do it. But no matter what happens, you know, All Blacks are down 15 points, I think, at one stage. No matter what happens, the All Blacks are always going to come back at you.
Yeah.
You know, Ireland found that out, didn't they?
Yeah.
A few years ago. They don't get flustered if they're down by 15 points.
They didn't score a point in the last 20, though. How often does that happen?
Yeah, not very often. But that it was that type of game. Because the weather was so bad, because there was a lot of mistakes, balls getting turned over, and the last 20 gets really tight. And I suppose, we've always said this, if teams are in the game in the last 20 against the All Blacks, there's a chance, because we know that someone like Beauden Barrett, his kick success rate isn't as high as other players.
Mm.
And we saw that a couple of times, especially against South Africa in the Rugby Championship. But it wasn't to be, was it? The All Blacks hung on. There's a disallowed try.
What a try that would have been, though.
What a try.
He could have retired Underhill, couldn't he, after that?
We'll get to your thoughts on the try, disallowed try at the moment. But, I mean, there's instances that happens all around the game which aren't highlighted, because it doesn't lead to a try scoring opportunity or a try deemed yes or no. Now, because Underhill scores that try, the referee has to go back and he has to check everything to make sure.
Yeah.
It is legal. Now, just at the last minute, the ruck is extended a little bit further back because a Kiwi leg comes out and extends the rucks. Therefore, the offside line is probably half a metre further back.
Yeah.
As he does that, this happens all simultaneously. As he does that, Courtney Laws is just offside, just before the ball is picked up. Piranara picks the ball up. You're talking split seconds, but in terms of the law, unfortunately for me, that is offside.
Yep.
And it's a shame, because you hate to see games decided on small margins.
TMO.
And decisions like this. You know, had there been no TMO, that, you know, 100% that would have been given a try.
Yeah. I think the argument that, well, if you go back, that's happened 100 times in the game, is...
But it hasn't led to tries.
They haven't been key moments. And actually, it's just like every breakdown. You could penalise something every 10 seconds in a game of rugby, but there would be no game. So if you're talking about key moments of the game, you know, so if someone's 6 inches or 12, you know, 8 inches offside 20 minutes in and it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever, then who cares? It's almost like if a line-out throw isn't exactly straight, but the opposition don't go up anyway and you're on the halfway line, I'm all in favour of letting it go. Or the scrum falls over and you don't quite know which way it's gone, but the ball's at the back, just play. It's no different. So I think it was a key moment. This is split opinion. I think it's very, very tough for England. I felt like he was offside. But a lot of the time, it's about the picture you paint for the ref. That's what the refs talk about. And if you just look at the picture itself, you know, you've got Chris Harris, the presenter of Top Gear, and I call him one of my best friends, met him once, but we tweet each other every now and again because I'm a car nerd, and if he replies, it like makes my year. He replied to a tweet I sent about it, and he said, unfortunately for Courtney, he just looks like his legs are a bit too long. The bloke's legs are too long. And weirdly, that's kind of it. It's like the picture the ref's looking at is a straight line of England players, and Courtney has stepped out of that line, and he's a big man in a white shirt. He's hard to miss. And it's just the picture you paint is, why has he promoted himself a foot further forward than everyone else? That doesn't mean he's offside, but it's the sort of picture that makes referees question themselves and think, can we award this?
So he wasn't offside?
No, I think he was.
Okay.
I thought he was offside. I thought it was the right decision, but also it's just the picture it paints.
Yeah. It's like someone who sprints out the line defensively.
They look offside.
They look offside.
Yeah.
But they're not offside, but in this case he was offside.
So yeah, so it's kind of, if every England player had been on level with Courtney, I bet you he wouldn't have been done for offside. It would have been a lot less likely. But because he was ahead of all of his teammates.
Yeah,
you know.
Clearly. The England line-out didn't function that well in the second half, I think mostly because of Jordy Barrett coming on. Do you agree with that?
I do and I don't. It's partly to do with that. I think they
lost five line-outs.
Yeah, so I think, firstly, everyone's blaming Jamie George, and that isn't where it's at for me. I'm not about protecting certain people.
No, not at all, because sometimes a throw is bang on. It's just the lift or the movement. The throw is a small component of the entire line-out.
What I'd say is, they come on, pretty soon after he comes on, he's asked to throw to the tail, and it was teeming with rain.
Mm.
He's asked to throw to the tail, nails it. He nails it because, along with Dylan Hartley, he's about as good as it gets at the top level as a thrower. He is brilliant at throwing. So, because it's so awful, I think, and he doesn't decide where the ball goes. So, he is told where the ball's going. A line-out caller, Cruz calls it, and then Ewells comes on and calls it when he replaces Cruz. Marrow doesn't call the line-outs. Marrow does what he's told, so does Jamie. So, you have an expert calling. Very, very hard job at test level against a good defence. Retallick effectively just goes up at the front and says, get over me, I'm 9 feet tall. Bit of timing involved, not much. He's going straight up and winning ball. Ewells calling the ball to himself, gets up really nice and sharp, wins it in the middle, but then they take the safe option. Let's go Saracen to Saracen, know each other inside out, but you are against, what you're doing is making it very, very simple for the defence. So the error for me, Ben Kay did a piece in the Times about it, really, really interesting. But yes, the New Zealanders were committing your defence, but we don't want to be relying on referees, you know, in the game. We don't want to be relying on referees. You don't want to leave it to the ref. It's repeatedly calling it to the place where it's getting nicked, which was frustrating me most when I watched it. I'm thinking, chuck it somewhere else. If you've got an average thrower who's a great player but not a brilliant thrower, then you can take it easy on him. And, you know, a caller like Steve Borthwick, he would ask, you know, John Humphreys, who was a good thrower but not as good as Lee Mears. John Humphreys would probably have to make fewer throws to the tail than Lee Mears because Mears, he could nail everything.
Yeah.
But that's the way it goes. Now, you know, I think the calling was overly sympathetic. You don't need to be sympathetic to Jamie George because despite what happened at the weekend, he is a world-class thrower of the ball under pressure. I mean, he's done it in massive games. So I think they should have taken a few more risks, chuck it to the middle or back more.
I mean, I think we saw how good a New Zealand team they are with their attack as well, mind. I mean, they were relentless attacking. They played far more rugby than England tried to play. And you look at...
In that weather too.
Yeah, I know. Like New Zealand, 46 defenders beaten, 14 clean breaks to England's 5 clean breaks, 5 defenders beaten. New Zealand had 10 offloads. England attempted to make nearly 100 more tackles than New Zealand. They had a 76% defence rate, which is pretty low, especially in those conditions.
Yep.
Because when the rain comes down, that's when you can really put pressure on teams about blitzing them.
England were at 76%, you say, yeah.
Whilst New Zealand were 86%. England, 7 penalties as well.
Yeah.
In the breakdown, New Zealand, 4.
Under
so,
pressure.
I mean, often, and more often than not, the stats agree with the scoreline. And sometimes it doesn't happen, but in this case, you know, New Zealand just dominated the stats.
Yeah, and England missed a lot of tackles, missed 23 in the first half.
Mm.
But I think when you're defending that aggressively, that's too many. That's way too many to miss. However, you're going to miss more when your defence is that aggressive and the line speed's that strong. And Owen Farrell missed a lot of tackles. There's people talking about it now. I know JB on from the Egg Chasers has been trying to get as many people to talk about it as he can to set the agenda. He thinks he's a political lobbyist. He is now. Well done, JB. But I think I just don't see as big a problem with Farrell's defence as everyone else does, because I think while he does fly up and miss a few, the hit he put on Kieran Reid, what it means is he's firstly not a soft option for attackers. So people don't think they're just going to make ground through England's 10, which is valuable, I think. But also, what he often does is force people to change their plans. And if you've got TO one side of you, Underhill the other, that is often, might count as a missed tackle, that is often really handy because you are disrupting the opposition attack.
You do your analysis before games and you look at areas in which you can attack people. Now, you would not say that 10 channel is an easy option.
No.
Against other international teams, it is. So then you have to try and work out other ways to attack. So, look, I agree with you. It's like saying that, I don't know, like a prop or a forward around Ruck and Maul misses a couple of tackles, they slip off a tackle, gets nailed by the next man.
Yeah.
You know, those tackles don't, you know, cause try-scoring or clean breaks. So,
yeah,
you know, it's very subjective.
Yeah.
When you look at missed tackles. I mean, yeah, a winger's missed tackles are going to be far more serious than a prop's missed tackles, potentially.
Yeah, generally,
because
yeah,
often if a winger or an outside centre or 15 misses a tackle, that's going to lead to a clean line break and potentially a try.
Yeah, and forwards are around traffic. And so he's often missing, Farrell's missing tackles in heavy traffic and forcing attackers to run into his mates. So I don't think there's a bigger problem there.
So England, Japan this week?
Yeah, should pace them really. Eddie Jones said he's going flat out and he wants to hammer them, and whatever, yeah, he should pace them really.
And you reckon they're going to put the full strength team out?
I think they'll go pretty close to it. A couple of guys might start, like guys like Charlie Yules might start.
Yes.
I'd like to see Zach Mercer start, but don't think he will. Also, it's easy to say nice to see someone start. I do think that more top nations should follow New Zealand's example by just being ruthless with rotation and giving people games, because then you get to World Cups and big tournaments and you've got more depth. But
especially around this time of year where the World Cup's next year,
yeah,
you need... It's about feeling comfortable as well playing, yeah, international rugby in front of 70,000, isn't it? It's a bit different to playing in front of 10,000 at your club.
Yeah.
It's the whole... And it's only something that you become comfortable with the more you do and the more experience you get. So
it's fixing problems under, yeah, increased pressure. I personally would start with Yules in the second row, with Marrow or Cruz, don't really mind who. But I would start with Zach Mercer at 8, Mark Wilson at 6 and Underhill at 7.
But it also depends, Flats, on where you are as a team as well. You know, if you've had a couple of bad losses or you're not quite sure what your best combinations are, then often these games are good, you know, to try and build those partnerships across the field.
Yeah.
Someone like New Zealand, you know, they win nearly all of their games, so it's a lot easier for them to swap people in and out.
Mm.
Whilst a lot of teams have confidence issues and, you know, want to build a little bit of momentum.
Mm.
But
you remember when Freddie Burns made that couple of howlers the other week against Toulouse?
Yeah.
I would, I said I would pick him first name in the team sheet for the next week. The first person I pick, I don't think Jamie George did have a shocker, but he's been criticised heavily. He will not have enjoyed that second half. I'd pick him for this week.
When was the last time England beat New Zealand?
2014.
Okay. Freddie Burns comes off the bench.
Yep.
And
yeah,
he has a brilliant, massive impact. Huge. It was on in one of the, in Gaucho before the main game, and I was, yep, watching it. I totally forgot that he came off the bench, but what a cameo appearance he
brilliant
made.
Brilliant, wasn't
he? Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. You know, it's quite easy for people to forget that as well.
Yeah.
So then after the England game, we had Wales, Australia. 10 years since the last time Wales beat Australia. 13 games. And most of these games have come within a score difference, mm, really. Last minute. Last sort of 3 or 4 minutes. And the roof was closed. The weather was pretty poor, as we saw at Twickenham. And the roof was closed. You had Gareth Anscombe at 10. You had Foley at 10. Folau was playing. John Davis was playing. George North. Karevi. So quality throughout that back line, really. Creative as well. And he thought, right, this is going to be the tri-fest. This is going to be an unbelievable game. You know, conditions were great. But as it panned out, my friend, 9-6.
Classic. Wales don't care, though.
No, they don't. 3-3, half time.
Amazing.
Wow.
When's the last time that happened in a test in the dry?
Yes, I know. But there was no real go forward in that game. So both teams are trying to play quite attacking rugby, quite wide rugby, trying to get the wide chance as you would,
yeah,
with the personnel that you've picked.
Yeah.
I mean, Wales didn't have any massive ball carriers to really dent through the middle. of the Aussies, and similarly with Australia. So it was just a battle of the breakdown. Like, Tipperick was really good at the breakdown as well, as were Pocock and Hooper. So
Pooper?
Yeah. So there wasn't really much room out there.
Hocock. Anyway.
And again, you know, you refer back to stats, because I like looking at the stats after games to see possession, missed tackles, and they pretty much make 50-50. There's possession was 53-47 in favour to Australia, territory 51-49.
Super
from
tight.
Hand. Yeah, everything really. Clean breaks, both had 8, defenders being quite similarly. Australia probably had a few more offloads, but rucks won.
The reality is
turnovers the same, 13-14.
It probably wasn't a brilliant game, but it was a magnificent occasion.
But what was, you know, what was a, you know, there's a 50 minutes, right? There's a penalty, kickable penalty, and Hooper decides to go for the corner. Australia don't convert. That's the 3 points gone. Lee Halfpenny misses 2 kicks. One was probably 60-70% or a 30-40% of that he probably should have got. One was in front of the posts, which never, ever happens.
Yeah.
And he misses it.
Yeah.
And he'll be devastated with himself. He then gets an HIA. There's a charge down. I think it might be, I can't remember who it is.
Karevi.
Karevi, I think so. Yeah. Jumps up.
It was Karevi, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you saying about that?
He's entitled to charge the ball down, mate. He's entitled to jump in the air and try and charge the ball down, because that happens so many times. What I would say is that you do have to be careful. Is if you are doing that, I don't think you should be able to turn your body then. Because you turn your body, you're bracing yourself a little bit, and a kicker, when he's kicked the ball, is left in
vulnerable.
A vulnerable position. And he does turn his body to brace himself, and there is a connection, and subsequently you lose Lee Halfpenny. So you're entitled to it, but I think you have to be really careful about, once you have charged the ball down, your body shape going into that contact, I think. So for me, it was a penalty, yes.
I agree.
I don't think it was a yellow card. But the bench for Wales was loaded, and we've not seen that too many times before. Often there's a quality 15 that goes out on the field, but you know, you're not bringing on like for like from the bench. But in this instance, you were. And you have to take your hat off to Dan Biggar coming off the bench. I think it was his second touch or third touch. He has to nail a fairly difficult kick to put them in front at 77-minute mark. And, you know, Australia just scored a penalty there from Matt Tamua, which was an unbelievable kick as well.
Yeah.
But big match players.
Bigger.
Yeah, he comes off the bench and just nails it, and that shows you the quality and the mental toughness he has.
Yeah, love
that.
And
brings to that team.
Yeah,
you know, so it's just a pleasing game, and result was way more important than performance, because Wales have played so many good games against Australia and lost in the last minute. I don't think it mattered about performance, and I know coaches say, "Oh, well, you know, we have to perform. You know, if we get the performance right, we'll win." That was out the window. The result had to happen, especially because it has been such a long time since Wales have won, and Australia being in Wales' pool for the World Cup.
Yeah, really important. Right, one word answer from you.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of pure entertainment and excitement value, who would you want to be the starting 10 at the World Cup for Wales? One word.
I really like Patchell at 10.
It's not one word, is it?
No, because it's not. You can't give a simple question, an answer to that question, because form is key at the moment. You know, I think if everyone was on form, all 10s on form, I think Patchell is the most devastating 10 Wales have. But not always is everyone on form. At the moment, right now, I would say Gareth Anscombe is Wales' best 10 at the moment, attacking-wise, but we know the game isn't just about attack, and we know it's defensive as well. It's defensive kicks, where Biggar is certainly, I think, better in his positional kicking and defensively. But when it's that close, I tend to go with more of the attacking option. And for me, Anscombe at the moment is probably Wales' best 10.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, fine, mate.
Ireland. Ireland played Argentina.
Classic.
Yeah, it was a pretty decent game, but a good hit out for Ireland, considering who they've got this weekend.
It's all about this weekend. Well done for beating Argentina, who are a bona fide good side now. But
they are. They've massive improvement in Argentina. You know, you look at the tour last year where Wales beat them pretty well, then Scotland absolutely hammered them. Mm. You know, they've drawn it back, they've brought it back. You know, they've beaten, I think, they beat Australia in the Rugby Championship. I think they beat South Africa as well. You know, don't hold me to that, but I'm trying to remember. But a pretty decent win.
Yeah, good. And if it rains this weekend in Dublin, who does that benefit? Because it rains a lot in New Zealand, you know.
Yeah. I'm wondering whether or not they'll look at the weather and then sort of decide who they want to play in that way. Because someone like Bundiaki would be far better in the wet conditions. And he's had another great season so far at Connaught. He had a very good game at the weekend. There's so much more to his game than just a power running game.
Yeah.
He's got some really, really subtle offloads as well. He's got a good passing game. He's
tough robust, guy to play against.
Robust in defence, You know, often, you know, players can run through arms.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you're taught to do. You know, you run at chest, you're going to get tackled hard, but you look at arms, that's your target. But if you run into his arm,
yeah, it's a punchy arm, that.
The clamp comes on.
Yeah, it's like...
And he scores a try at the weekend, which
Dale
is really
McIntosh's
good.
Dale McIntosh's arm.
Yeah. He just cuts back inside, the space opens up, scores a nice try. But, I mean, Argentina did do pretty well.
Yeah.
They look pretty good in attack.
Yeah, a good team. And when they're lovely, for the World Cup, they'll be great, I reckon.
Yeah, they're lovely bust through the middle, trying to play that wraparound move, and often you're looking at that, the 10 coming around the back of the outside centre, but he hits the outside centre, goes through the hole, eventually they score. Mm. So, you know, Ireland were cut a couple of times attacking-wise, but this, I suppose, is team one, team two in order.
Let's do it.
This weekend, international rugby.
Yeah.
In Ireland. Has to favour Ireland. It's the game of the weekend.
Do you make Ireland favourites?
No, I don't think you can ever make Ireland favourites against New Zealand. I think New Zealand will take a lot of confidence from that win against England, and rightly so, because England were phenomenal, I thought,
found
for
a
that
way.
First half. But yeah, they found a way. They did what it took to win. No one remembers the score. You know,
yeah.
No one's going to remember, oh, well, you know, we only lost them by a point. You know, they beat them by New Zealand. That's it.
Yeah.
But agreed. I'm looking forward to it.
Can't wait. I cannot wait for Ireland, New Zealand this weekend. I'll be blooming watching that on my telly, Tom.
Wales, Tonga, be very interested. It's Wednesday now. I'm sure the team's going to be announced tomorrow. Be very interesting to see what Wales do. I think they'll have to look at a couple of different options. Maybe Owen Watkins. I think Rhys Patchell potentially is in the mix of playing 10 as well. I think Gareth Anscombe might be rested. He played the first two games. I hope they continue with Josh Adams, because he was brilliant.
I thought he was great.
Just carried so well.
Hear what Gatland said, by the way. The next job's to get him back to Wales. He
yeah.
Said. Worcester won't like hearing that, will they?
No, they won't, but that's...
That's the game.
And it's a good law to have, a good ruling to have, because we want the best players playing in Wales. We want the league to be thriving. We want the attendances to come in. You know, teams and regions don't have massive budget or a pool of players to pick from. So I think it's key that he comes back. If he comes back, that's a great sign that he wants to really cement his position in that team. And, you know, he kept out Liam Williams as well.
I know.
Which, he's scored two hat-tricks this year already for Saracens. So,
and he's class.
He is class. But, you know, you can't drop Josh Adams on that performance.
No.
I thought he was really good.
No.
Solid as well, big bloke, but carries the ball really well. Not afraid of contact, not afraid of being aggressive in defence and attack. Good under the high ball, with bags of pace.
Yeah, good on him. I like watching him. Lovely to watch. We get to watch him every week, which is nice.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, going to see Hoggy every week. Well, we do anyway. But Stuart Hogg signing for Chiefs just before we sign off. If he stays fit, what a signing!
Signing. He does stay fit though. He's not. He doesn't break down that often. All players get injured, but
yeah,
he's not.
I'm not saying that because I think he breaks down a lot. It's just anyone you pay massive dough to, you just think, please don't get injured.
That's the worst thing for a player as well. You turn into a new club. You want to make an impact. You want players to like you. You want to start playing the games. You want that camaraderie, and the worst thing you want is to get injured, because then you're just
twist your ankle and take your money for nothing. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, Roy Lawson gives a really good answer on
Five Live.
Yeah, just about, you know, what Stuart Hogg wants as a player. I mean, it's important for his family. That's what Roy Lawson's saying. It's important that he goes to a club where they have a great morale, a great culture, which you've certainly got Exeter. And, you know, they challenge the Gallagher Premiership very regularly. You know, they're one of the best teams there, but they've not quite gone on to the next step of Europe. But I think with someone like Stuart Hogg there, you know, he's one of their marquee players.
He's a worldie.
He's going to be absolutely fantastic for him in a great culture with a great coach and a great team.
Lovely signing.
Three cheers for Hoggy.
Three cheers for Hoggmeister General. Right, that's it, boy. Should we go home?
Yeah, let's go home. Sorry the pod's a little bit late, but yeah, we're just...
busy at charity work.
International, that's what we are.
The global.
Prestige worldwide.
Worldwide. Wide. See ya.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.